Thank you. Okay. Let's just begin with a few moments of quiet meditation to put us in tune with the subject that we're talking about and with each other as much as possible. Relax your mind from everything that's come before and everything that will come after, so that our collective magnetism will be clear and bright and strong, and we can pull from the infinite the pearls of wisdom and the intuitive understanding that each one of us needs to go forward from here with greater hope and courage, understanding and joy. Om peace. Amen. All right, everyone. The subject of the chakras is fascinating and infinitely larger than what we're going to be able to talk about tonight. I have a website. Well, you don't need the WWs anymore. It's just my name, Asha, and the word joy, ashajoy.com. And it will lead you to a YouTube channel which has about 800 videos on it now. It's getting to be an embarrassingly large number. And included in there, if you're interested, there is a four-part series on the chakras, which is very casually filmed, but the content of it is very, very good. And I'm going to touch on some things tonight, but we have an hour and a half. That's much longer. And anything, actually, that... Good heavens, hello. I just realized who you are. Nice to see you. Sorry. You've been looking so familiar, and it just took me a minute to recognize you. Old friends from a very long time. Anything that I'm talking about and touching on tonight, it's all on the video on the YouTube channel. Okay. So the subject of the chakras also, the other reality of it is that many, many, many people talk about it, and you hear many discussions and ideas from people. Can I help you? Do you need paper? No, go ahead and just help yourself. I just didn't want to, I wanted to make your life easier instead of more difficult. Are you okay? Yeah. Do you have what you need? Okay. Many people talk about the chakras, and they talk about it from many different angles. There's a lot of different points of view, and some of the things I say may contradict other things that you've heard. And I'm happy to, try to reconcile it insofar as I can. When I'm talking about the chakras, I don't have that kind of visionary sight that some people have, where I can look at people and see what's whirling around inside of them. I have been meditating according to the practice of Kriya, which is a practice that works very specifically with the energy in the chakras. I have been studying the path of self-realization through... We don't have autobiography of a yogi here, which we should, by Paramahansa Yogananda. And that's the basis of everything that I teach. I didn't know him. He died in 1920. But I was very close with his direct disciple, Swami Kriyananda. I met him actually in 1969. And that's pretty much all I've done. I'm very highly educated in a very narrow field, is what it is, but it's the field that really interests me. So what I'm giving you is authority from teachers far superior to myself, whose truthfulness I have come to trust. So I present their point of view with a great deal of conviction, combined with a certain level of intuition and experience that I myself have gathered. So if I'm beyond myself, I make it clear, but I still have reason to believe. If you experience up to a certain point and everything is consistent, then when you're a little beyond your own experience, there's a level where you can say this is probably also true. Okay. I'm going to just go from the foundation of this, even though some of you may know some of what I'm saying, partly because it'll just put us all on the same page. My throat has been playing games with me for about a year, so you'll just have to excuse me. I just have to make these horrible noises every once in a while just to clear it, like right now. All right. The word chakra is a Sanskrit word. I favor English. It's the only language I speak. But every language has its orientation toward what it's interested in. I was hearing some marvelous just individual words from individual languages. There's an actual German word which means face just asking for a fist. You know how the Germans put words together like that? Well, in Sanskrit, what they're most interested in is inner consciousness and inner realities. It has not been, until recently, the primary interest of English-speaking people. But English is a great language because when we don't have a word for it, we just find somebody else's. And so a lot of words from Sanskrit are just making it into English. Karma, guru as two examples, and chakra is another one of them. Chakra means wheel, and it's a whirling field of energy. That's what a chakra actually is. And it's a concentrated place within us in which the energy is focused. The chakras run through the center of the body, but we're not talking about the physical body. Someone wrote me with a great deal of concern once because they'd had a hysterectomy, a woman, and she was told that her second chakra had been removed, and she wanted to know what, you know, she could do to compensate for that. I told her that would be some surgeon. Because what we're actually dealing with is that everything in this manifested world actually emanates on three levels. And those three levels are the level of the idea, the level of the energy, and then the level of the manifestation. The common words for these are we talk about the causal level. Things are caused from the level of ideas. The astral level is where the energy is added to it, and the material level is where we live. If you think about this building that we're in, it exists because somebody had an idea that they should make a building. The building would never have been built if somebody didn't have the idea of making a building. And then they had to add energy to that idea, and that energy was in the form of plans and money and gathering the materials and so on. And then finally, it was able to manifest on the material plane. And even though we're just living in the material manifestation of this, the energy that went into the building of it and the idea of making it is all part of what's happening here. And if it begins to disintegrate on the material plane, you have to go and put more energy into it, and you may even have to come up with a new idea about how to keep it going. Now, this little tiny picture of this little building is the pattern that is existing everywhere, including us. You know, you and I and everything and every living creature in this universe exists on three levels. There was an idea that we would exist. There was energy that was created, and then it manifested on the physical form. Now, this principle, when we talk about human life, we're talking about the fact that the material expression of who we are is only one dimension of us. And it's not even the origin point. It is rather the last expression of something that began on a more subtle level. Now, in the whole idea of self-realization, which is very fundamental to the chakras, we're talking about the divine level, the infinite idea. I'm a devotee in that sense, so I just use the word God very easily and happily. This is infinite spirit, manifests itself. Now, I'm way beyond my portfolio. I have no idea what this actually means, but this is a fact that the idea of us exists in the infinite. We exist on the energy level, and then we manifest on the physical. Now, most of our lives are our lifetimes, and I mean multiple lifetimes, we spend between the physical and the astral. When our physical bodies die, increasingly, in the age that we live in, people no longer hold this idea that when your physical body dies, you have died. And you can find a whole lot of books out here, and many of them are very interesting, about people who've had a death and return experience. People call it a near-death experience, but in fact, they've actually died. They just didn't stay dead. There was a cartoon, and it was a crowded subway, you know, in Chicago or New York, one of those places, and all the people are all sitting really close to each other, and one of the passengers is death, you know, with the scepter like this and the hood over him like this, and he's just sitting there clearly being deaf. And then the woman next to him gets up and said, well, this is my stop. Thank you for the near-death experience. But people are having these experiences, coming back, telling us about them. And when they tell us about them, they say the very interesting thing, which is you don't really die. And it's your physical body. You may leave your physical body, but that which we experience as ourselves, we discover that it is independent of the physical body. And you may have had this experience through the practice of meditation, through an experience in nature, through a transcendent experience of loving someone. It comes to us in many ways. Every so often, the sort of little encasement will crack, and we'll realize that there's a force in here of which I simply use the body to express it, but it's neither defined nor limited by the body. This is changing everybody's concept of death quite seriously, because the realization that there's a continuing reality and that experience of death is just a transition puts everything in a very different perspective. So what happens to us, according to all the masters, is we alternate between the material world and the astral world for the most part. And when we die, we go to heaven or hell. All the pictures of heaven and hell are based on some true perception. It's just, it's gotten a little, I don't know if I want to use the word romanticized, made rigid, just a little bit too fixed. And what actually happens is that we put on and off our physical bodies, just like we put on and off our clothes. And if we put ourselves in a tremendous costume with all sorts of things, I mean, just now we decide to put on a costume. I was part of a little skit for a friend for his birthday, and I played an old woman. This was when I was less of an old woman than I am now, but I played a much older-looking woman than I am even now. And, you know, with a wig and everything like that. And I was so changed that when my voice came out of that body, it actually terrified him, because I looked just like his mother. And he wasn't fond of his mother, and it just scared the bejesus out of him, is all I can say. Just, he just didn't know what to do with that combination. But of course, inside, no matter how different I looked, and no matter even how unrecognizable I was to a friend, I knew that I was still the same. So what happens to us over the course of a long cycle, and reincarnation and karma are absolutely intimate with the chakras. And one of the most powerful things that you learn about the chakras is chakras explain essentially the mechanism of karma and reincarnation, which helps us understand how and why that might be true, is that we have many physical incarnations, and when we die, we go for a time into the astral world where we are still ourselves. Swami Kriyananda put it to me this way once: nothing happens when you die. That's how he put it. Nothing happens, in the sense that you are living in this body and then you're not living in this body, but you have continued in such an unbroken way that the idea that some gigantic experience took place, because the essential reality that we're always experiencing is our own consciousness. The combination of values, of reactions, of love and hate, of happiness and sorrow, of freedom and bondage. If you look through your whole life experience, you'll realize that's all you're ever experiencing. How nervous am I? How confident am I? How much do I feel loved? How much do I feel rejected? And everything that you experience is always through the lens of what the essential, let's use the word vibration, of your actual consciousness is. And even though you can turn that lens on many different circumstances, it's still the same lens, which is why we tend to have repeating experiences in our lives. People who have not so good karma with relationships will find themselves marrying the same not so good person time after time, and they'll just wake up with a thunk and realize they've done it again, because the vibration is there. You have repeated difficulties or repeated successes also, because it's the same lens. So when we leave the material plane and are just looking through the lens of our consciousness at the non-physical world, we're still ourselves. Now, what that essential myself is the vibration of the chakras cumulatively. So when I say, and this I started had to go there because I was saying the chakras are these energy centers that run down the center of the physical body, but they are not physical. Rather, it's the opposite. It's that the physical body is accumulated around the vibration of the chakras. It's because the chakras are there that the body is what it is, and then through the body, the energy of the chakras emanates, and this world is nothing but energy. It appears to be solid, but now scientifically, they're telling us. I don't actually understand them very well, but they're telling us, and I believe them without understanding them, that they've proven objectively that what appears to be solid matter is really just energy in all sorts of forms of vibration. Albert Einstein declared this, and everything else kind of rippled down from that point of view. We understand it better, but we still don't really understand it. But the fact of what that means is, on a practical level, is that this world is influenced in terms of energy forces. And that's where people will talk about the power of positive thinking, as simple as that. Or if you worry about it too much, you'll manifest it. And, you know, that sort of thought. And there's truth in that. I mean, there's very valid truth in that, because energy fields are just pushed around by the comparative magnetism. If somebody has a really powerful force, then they cut a swath through the room, so to speak. And people who have very little energy force get overlooked and nothing much happens. But whatever energy we're putting out is drawing or repelling exactly what matches that energy field. So the pattern we're looking at here is far more interesting, because it's really all just interrelated. I listened to a talk sponsored by East West. I believe the man's name was Dr. Lipton. Forgive me if I can't remember it accurately, but he had these marvelous slides and pictures of people's auras and photographs of groups of people and then what they really looked like and how much their energy fields were overlapping and how much we were all a part of each other in ways that we don't even know. Well, where does your energy field come from? What is it? Your energy field is your chakras, because your chakras within you are the magnetic pattern. They're literally the astral blueprint. Just like this building, if you found it, has blueprints, the Ananda Church that is mentioned in those magazines that you're holding in your hand is this big, old, beautiful building built about in the 1940s as a Catholic church. And when we took possession of that, we also inherited this huge carton of blueprints. I can't read blueprints, but I open them up. I mean, I don't know what they say. So, I just looked at them. Pages and pages of detailed pictures of everything about that building. And when the men wanted to, you know, change a wall or do something, they all opened them up. They could read those blueprints, and then they could see what the building was. Well, there's a blueprint, because everything starts as an idea. Then then the energy pattern is created. Then it's materialized. There's a blueprint for our entire experience. Everything that we are now, and that blueprint, but the difference between the blueprint of the building is that that blueprint is fixed. Once it was drawn, the building was made, that's the way it stayed. The blueprint that we're working with is an energy pattern. And the thing about an energy pattern is that if you apply another kind of energy to it, it just shifts, doesn't it? There's not the slightest thing that's actually fixed about any aspect of our nature. Yogananda would often challenge his audiences, and, you know, this is just what he said was true. He said, you know, you can regenerate a lost limb, he said. You can change the entire physical structure. You can cure any disease. And he himself, Yogananda, when he was in America, he lived from 1920 until 1952 in America, and he gave lectures all over the United States, and he would fill the largest halls in the largest cities. He was the most popular lecturer in America through the 1930s. And there's a lot of reasons why. There were very few, almost no Indians in America. And he was the first really powerful teacher from India to make his home in the West. Two others had come before him. But he was the one who just, he was such a phenomenon. And he did miraculous things on the stage. I mean, just stunned people. He would stand in front and he would invite the doctors up and His pulse would be one count on this side, another count on this side. Then he would stop it on this side, but keep it going on this side. And then he did feats of strength, and he backed himself up once against the edge of the stage, and then he had all these big policemen come and push on him and try to hold him there. And without any visible movement, he flexed his abdomen like that, and they all tumbled backwards. You know, just, and he lay out with just his heels on the edge of the bed, and just the back of his head here on another chair, and then had people bounce on him, and he couldn't be moved, because it was all an energy pattern, and he had the capacity to generate whatever energy pattern he needed. He turned himself into steel if he needed to. So in theory, if we had the concentration and the determination and the understanding, we can change anything, which is what the whole new thought movement is really all about. All from all different angles, people are trying to teach us you can change anything if you simply know how to go in and do it. And it's really actually, whether they're talking about it or not, it's actually all about the chakras. So back to it again. The physical body that we're living in has within it a vibrating pattern of energy, of which this is the manifestation. It's like we carry the blueprint with us. The blueprint for our church building is just in a big carton. It was under the bed in our guest room for many years, and now it's under somebody else's bed. I don't really know where it is, but it's not there. Okay, but our blueprint we're carrying all the time because we're a living, active, responding being. And every time we interact with our world, anytime we do anything at all, we are committing ourselves, because our energy is who we are committing ourselves to a certain perception of reality. Now, there's many, many perceptions of reality. People are always, you know, they have their own points of view. We see things as we see things. Okay? Jesus Christ, Paramahansa Yogananda, Lord Buddha, Krishna, these great recognized souls who lived in physical bodies, but perceived the world extremely differently. They didn't have different eyes and ears than we have, but they had a different vibration and they perceived reality differently. They were able to see infinite consciousness at the same time that they could see the finite consciousness. In your own life experience, I'm sure you've met many different people who just have different points of view and just different absolute senses of what is real and what isn't. Somebody will have the point of view that nothing is my fault, that everything is done to me, that I don't really have any part at all in the way people treat me. I saw a television something or another, and somebody was going to do... I love America, where everything can be decided by just a vote. And so this television crew decided they would decide once and for all whether or not there was a mind-body connection in the fact of cancer. If people had cancer, if there was any mind-body connection, if you had any responsibility, in other words, for cancer. And so they interviewed people who had cancer and decided they would just take a poll. So they asked a woman with cancer if there was any connection with her being sick and, you know, anything that she herself had done. Her response was, hell no. She said, it's bad enough that I have cancer. I'm not going to be responsible for it, too. And that was pretty much that. You know, it's a point of view. And I'm not about to say that you can just draw such simple lines. Oh, you were bad, and therefore you have cancer. You know, you ate lemons when you should have eaten oranges, and therefore you have cancer. You know, you're mad at somebody, therefore you have cancer. There are relationships, but they're not that simple. When they're not so you're wrong and he's right kind of energy either. But there are certainly relationships. But just a moment, I lost the thought there. Oh, but every time we respond to life in one way or another, we are affirming a truth somewhere between what I might call Christ-like forgiveness and the fact that everybody's no damn good and they're all out to get me. And if I don't get them first, they are going to get me. And that's sort of where you can live. I am a part of all that is. Infinite joy and love is my goal in life, at least, if not my true nature. I see everyone with sympathy and compassion, and I want to help them as much as I want to help myself. And looking out for number one is the only way to get ahead. And I don't really care what happens to them if I can get away with it. And most of the time, and every single time, you make a decision about anything. Somewhere on that spectrum, you're deciding, who am I? I mean, what am I really? Where does my happiness come from? What causes suffering? What is lastingly real? And then we'll make decisions accordingly. Now, many of those decisions are so, I'll use the word subconscious, so habitual, that we don't even stop and think about it. We just do it. You know, I myself haven't had a drink since I was 18. I was driving one night home. I sometimes go up to Ananda Village, which is 4 hours from here near Grass Valley, and for various reasons, I've often had to drive home really late on Saturday night to be home by Sunday morning. Driving home at, you know, 1 in the morning, often there's nobody on the road but you. And I was on this piece of road that was kind of rough. I mean, there was a lot of rough spots, so I kept changing lanes, sort of looking for a smoother spot because there was nobody there but me. And pretty soon this policeman pulls me over. I'm so out of it. I mean, out of it in the sense that I live in another, I've been in an ashram since I was in my early 20s. So he starts asking me questions, you know, the kinds of questions like, what year is it? Where are you coming from? What city do you live in? Who's the president? Questions like that. I'm looking at him like, what? You know, you're stopping me at 1 in the morning for an update on, you know, like, and then I finally just, I thought, oh, you think I'm drunk? Because it took me a long time to get it. Oh, you think I'm drunk? Because I was changing lanes all the time, wasn't I? And then I looked at him and I said, I haven't had a drink since 1966. And I looked at him for a minute and I said, you weren't even born in 1966, were you? I said, were your parents born in 1966? You know, and then, of course, it was all over and I went away. But a long time ago, that reality, because I decided that my consciousness and my clear mind was my best friend, and I just didn't want to do anything to touch it. And I didn't feel better for decreasing my awareness. I felt better for increasing it. Now, that doesn't mean I'm never tempted. That doesn't mean I never watch 3 movies in a row. You know, it's not like I'm free, but I've made certain decisions like this because of what I think is true. I became very absorbed in health foods at the age of 18. I've been a vegetarian since all that time. I drink lots of water. I have all these ideas in my mind of who I am, what's real, what makes me happy. I have a deep faith in God. I really feel that there is a benevolent, loving force that is always looking out for us, that is a better friend to me than any other being ever could be, and that everything that comes to me, at least in theory, I believe, comes from God and is for my own good. And sometimes I waffle on that, but underneath it's always there. So every decision is based on something like that, and all of us have something that we decide. So in a very simple way, if we're going to put it like this, there's a spectrum that exists, and I'm going to make it horizontal even though the chakras are considered vertical. And on this end, let's say there's the spiritual eye, the awareness of Christ consciousness, and on this there's just nothing but confusion and blackness. And somewhere in there, every time we do anything, we register, just like on a piano. You know, there's the whatever there are a number of keys, and each one has a specific identifiable vibration that you can measure. So every time we do something, now I can talk a really big story about death doesn't matter, we're just spiritual beings and so on, but if I'm on the freeway and I think I'm going to come and, you know, somebody's going to smash into me, I've been known to make a lot of scary noises, you know, just panic in the moment and not be able to hold that. When we had that earthquake here, which was now quite a long time ago, 1989, I was inside a building, and some of my friends said later, as soon as the earth began to shake, they just started oming and like this. I didn't. I started screaming, and I ran outside. You know, I wasn't proud of it, but I forgot everything except that my physical body was threatened by the fact that it looked like the building was going to fall on me. I was way outside before I captured, you know, what I would have preferred to respond. But this is not the thing about this spectrum, is it isn't a matter of opinion. And it isn't a matter of what kind of story you say. It's what you actually, how you actually respond. Somebody who's even a friend of yours starts talking to you in such a way that you feel threatened. All of a sudden, they're not your friend at all anymore. The only safety is within yourself, and you have to push them away. No matter how you might feel at other moments, that's also in you. Okay? Now, the chakras, and I'll make it a vertical system now, and this to a degree is an oversimplification, but that's why I'll send you to the website for a bigger story. Here's my picture of us. There we are. Okay, the chakras are, they're seven in number. It starts at the base of the spine, then where the sexual organs are, then where the navel is, the heart, and then the throat. Where would the throat be? Well, the throat would actually be lower, but we'll just put it right there. And then there's the spiritual eye, and then there's the Sahasrara, the crown chakra. Now, Yogananda adds also an extra here, which is the medulla, which is actually is the same chakra as that one. So the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh chakra. Okay? Now, these also have these corresponding elements: earth, water, fire, air. This is called ether, which in ancient systems is considered to be an element more subtle than air. And then Yogananda used the word super ether to describe this. And then this is beyond all elements. Okay. If you think about this also, well, there's many different ways to look at this. What these represent, now every chakra, you have to understand, is positive, because all chakras are required. Because if we're going to manifest on the earth level, then our energy has to circulate all the way through to the material plane. But what every chakra has a positive way of expressing itself, which is to say that it facilitates an expansion of our awareness, and it has a negative way of expressing itself, which means to say it's contractive to our awareness. Because the spectrum we're talking about is the spectrum really of lasting happiness. Not temporary pleasure, not ease, not comfort, but that which is enduring. So my inclination, my decision many, many years ago not to drink is just a really simple one. It doesn't make me happy. You know, whatever you get, whatever a person gets from it, I never drank very much anyway. I was never inclined. I did take more drugs than drinking, but I just lost interest in it because I didn't really find it made me happy. I felt that I got smaller rather than larger. So if you habitually run your life by pushing everybody away who threatens your particular worldview, you're actually keeping yourself smaller. But if you think it makes you happy to keep yourself smaller, that's what you'll do. So every chakra has two ways of expressing itself. One is to use the essential quality of that chakra to move you to a higher level of awareness, or to use that essential level of energy just to essentially dissipate the energy. People talk about chakras being blocked, and they are, but what they actually are is they have holes in them. Because ideally, here at the medulla, let's go up to the sixth chakra here, which is the spiritual eye. Between the medulla and the spiritual eye here, this is our sense of individuality. This is our self-definition. Who do I think I am? Now, the medulla, and this is something that Yogananda adds to the science of the chakras that is not commonly spoken of. This is the seat of our egoic self. Now, I'm not talking about egotism. I'm just talking about ego per se. Everybody has an ego, because the ego is the individual identified with the limited. There's a word for it in Sanskrit that there's no other word in English. The word is jiva. And jiva roughly translates to the word soul, but jiva is more accurate. Jiva is that spark of individuality which is always you, which puts on all these different bodies, which goes through all these different incarnations, which gradually expands itself until the bubble merges back into the great infinite sea. This is the bubble, in a little sense you could call it. This is the bubble right here. that eventually becomes the ocean, that came from the ocean and becomes the ocean. Okay, so the jiva, even though infinite in nature, it never becomes less than infinite, but it identifies as less than infinite. Can you feel the difference? The word identify with is an extremely interesting word when you start talking philosophically and spiritually. Because the reason we are so concerned about this body, the reason I panic on the freeway if I think somebody's going to run into me, is because my jiva has decided that I am this body. And so if this body is threatened, I am deeply convinced that I am threatened. Because I've identified with it. Now, if this body is actually smashed up and I exit from it, according to what everybody is telling us, it doesn't matter at all. We suddenly realize I was just wearing it. It was never me. But I forgot that it wasn't me because I became so deeply identified with it. And we run that all through our lives. We become very identified with being a mother. And then when our children go away or repudiate us for some reason or turn on us for one reason or another, we feel like we ourselves have been destroyed. If we identify as a wife and the husband walks out, I think something has happened to me because I have identified with that external role. I've gone beyond just identifying with my body. Now I've identified with all the things my body does. If I'm used to being a productive person and now I'm retired and nobody wants my opinion, I feel diminished because who am I? So that was one of the questions when I was talking about the chakras. Who am I? Who do I think I am? So the medulla is the jiva identified with limitation, primarily the physical body. The spiritual eye is the jiva identified with the infinite. It's the same chakra. It's just the opposite poles of that chakra. And the whole of spirituality is this, is to shift our identity from limited to unlimited. From finite, conditional, vulnerable, isolated, suffering, to free. That's what the sixth chakra does for us. Now, ideally, I mean, all of our life is run from the sixth chakra. The ego decides what everything is going to do. Or the ego works in harmony with the spirit and decides what everything is going to do. So all of the energy in the chakras circulates in circulates like this, in a pattern like that. And it just continues to circulate like this. I'm not drawing it very well, but that's what it does. It goes up and down all the time. And actually, inhalation and exhalation is because the breath is flowing in the chakras. Ideally, all decisions are made from the spiritual eye. And so even when we're working with the different aspects of ourselves represented by each chakra, they are guided from a higher level. And that's when the system is working at optimal, which for most of us it isn't. If it's not working at optimal, each of these levels just acts on its own according to its own limited understanding. So I'll start with the earth chakra because it's an easy one to illustrate. The earth chakra represents our relationship and our commitment to the material plane. It also represents the quality of security. And everybody, every living being, needs a sense of security. So the earth chakra asks the question, where does my security come from? So does my security come from getting this material world in order? And, you know, there's a lot of people who are, let's use that very popular word, very controlling. And they're very controlling because their sense of security in the manifested world depends on having it all just the way they need to have it. Or you can decide that my security comes from my faith in God. And so you still have to be strong in the earth chakra. You have to have some grounded place of loyalty and security. But what is it? Is it guided from a higher level, or is it just simply the most obvious way that it could be? You see the difference? Okay, the water element represents our flexibility. You know, water moves. This is where intuition comes from. Because water, the earth element, everything that is material just remains material. It always looks like it looks. Water in this cup looks like the cup, you know, and I'm going to pour just a little on the rug, and now it looks like the rug, you know, because it has that flexibility about it. So the water element is what makes us able to flow, to go with things. But if we're too watery and we don't have enough earth, we don't have enough loyalty to something solid, then we become wishy-washy, right? And we just go every direction without any place to be. So the water element has to be guided, or else it takes us where we don't want to go. Now, I'm going to not actually go through all the rest of them yet, because I just wanted to give the principle of that. So what we're trying now every time, now looking at this, there's lots of different templates you can put on the chakras. So now I'm putting the elements. Just to finish this briefly, the fire element is energy. So you can be very flexible and you know, very loyal, but if you don't have any energy, nothing ever happens. And fire is also transforming. So whatever, you know, stuck energy you have here, it can evaporate the water and it can destroy the earth. Fire liberates. So without fire, nothing happens in your life. Too much fire directed the wrong way burns up the people around you instead of you. Instead of your limitations, it burns up them. So again, has to be directed. Air is when you begin to expand in a sense of unity. Suddenly the boundaries are not so rigid. You know, you're able to actually take on others as being as valuable to you as yourself. Air is a more subtle sense of unity. The ether is when, this is communication also, when you're able to really become, to a large extent, the more the world around you. It's calm expansiveness, that's the word I wanted to use. And then I've already talked about the sixth chakra. Now, this is one template that you can lay over it. Let me just, now I'm just going to take this off for a minute so I can put the other one here. The other one is the one I was putting out horizontally, and I'll put it again vertically. And this time, what we're thinking of is the degree to which each of these chakras represents our capacity to feel unity with all that is, to be infinite in our awareness. So now, every time we do something that absolutely affirms our separateness from everything in the universe, which is like on the material plane, you know, this pen is just a pen. I can throw it on the ground and it'll always look like a pen. There's just no way I can break it. It represents unbreakable separateness. When the jiva acts as if it is the only being in the whole universe and anything that happens to me has no relationship to anyone else, no one can help me and I don't want to help anybody, that's a certain vibration of consciousness. Now, I spoke of the chakras as being whorls of energy like this. So every time you do something that affirms your separateness completely, you add energy to this chakra, right? Every time that you do something that exercises your fiery will, it adds energy to this chakra. Every time you do something of a loving, giving kind, it adds energy to this chakra. Okay? Now, I'm just going to make it progressive in that sense. And this is where the idea comes up that the lower chakras are not good and the upper chakras are better, because the lower chakras are more fixed and separate and the upper chakras are more expansive and unified. So over the course of a day or an hour or an incarnation, all those thoughts, feelings, ideas, actions, decisions that you make, every single one of them vibrates with a certain level of consciousness. And it doesn't go away. It's not like once you say something really horrible and mean, it's gone. Even if the person you said it to forgets it, you yourself have expressed a certain energy of a certain vibration, and it has shifted your own magnetism. And it has made you more of whatever you just did. So when the physical body dies, there is this pattern of energy, which is your chakras. And this vibrating energy is you, because this is the filter with which you experience reality, through which you experience reality. So that filter goes with you. And you're in the astral world, and you look pretty much like you look now, like the the movies all show us. The same actor falls over and then the same actor gets up, except now he walks through the walls and stuff like that. But he's vibrating just like this. He's just not vibrating through a physical body now. And you live in the astral world and you go to the astral world that matches your vibration. This is the principle of heaven and hell. Because this world, material world, is heterogeneous. You know, we can, demons and angels are all walking side by side here. We're each walking within our own sphere and we're attracting and repelling according to our vibrations, but we're occupying the same physical space, more or less. But you will notice that people gravitate to areas where they're more, where they feel comfortable. They'll go places where they'll feel comfortable. Because I have such an aversion to loud noise and loud music and so on like that, people will go on purpose to nightclubs or places like that where to me it's like it's hell for me to be in there because I don't vibrate with that at all. And so it's just a complete dissonance. And people will come into our Ananda church and they'll think nothing is happening. They'll just be certain, like there is nothing happening in this place, even though all these people are here and they appear not to be asleep. There is nothing happening here because they don't vibrate with it. So we go where we vibrate. And we're in the astral world vibrating according to our pattern. And what all of these chakras also represent is that ultimately, and this is the roadmap to self-realization, ultimately this life that we're living is not random and is not purposeless, and it has a whole, we're going somewhere. And where we're going is to self-realization, which is what's represented when the jiva identifies with the infinite and no longer identifies with the finite. And every time we make a decision, we're expressing, as I was saying, some understanding or lack of it. So all of these chakras also represent what we still have to learn. Because as long as we're making decisions that have the jiva identified with anything but the infinite, we still have an unlearned lesson. An unlearned lesson is the definition of the word karma. Because karma is something that has to happen to you. And it has to happen to you because of something you yourself set in motion that requires that it fulfill itself. And what we've set in motion is that the jiva wants to become infinite. And if it's still identified with limitation, it sets in motion the necessity to confront that ignorance and transcend it. And so that's what you're vibrating all the time. You're vibrating what you know and what you don't know. And so anything that comes to you, however random, unpleasant, marvelous, or otherwise, somewhere in the middle, is coming to entirely because you're vibrating something that the jiva needs to experience in order to keep clearing the chakras, really, until there's nothing left but this identification with the infinite. So does that all make sense? That's why people can say they can read your chakras, they can tell you what your destiny is going to be. Now, I think that's plenty without questions, so let me ask for questions. I can see you're ready. Right.
However you are vibrating, you attract similar.
Right.
But then you just said that the goal of the system is to be one with the universe. So shouldn't we, if you're building bad energy, shouldn't we attract more positive? Because that's what is will help.
That doesn't take into account free will, which is that we don't have the capacity. We have to develop the capacity to want freedom. Okay. It's not passive. We don't just sit there and then like some science experiment and then it all comes back to an equilibrium. We constantly exercise our own decision-making power and pull ourselves in a certain direction. There is a universal force, divine love, which is also pulling us this way. But we can pull this way for as long as we want to. And that can just go on until we ourselves, from our own experience, realize that what I'm really seeking lies in cooperation with that pull. But the only way we learn that It's from our own experience. Nobody ever learns anything from being told. We only learn from experience. I mean, certainly I'll speak for myself. I used to think I could learn. I used to think other people could learn from being told by me. But I gradually noticed that I didn't learn by being told by anybody, so I got the point.
This kind of contradicts another thing. Uh-huh. Just for understanding, not critiquing.
No, I understand. It's not easy.
Commonly people say, follow your heart. Mm-hmm. Right? But if the heart is all wrong, I mean, it's going
well,
in that direction.
The heart is not as reliable as the spiritual eye, because the heart is, you know, the heart balances right here, and it's right. See the heart, these two chakras, the heart and the solar plexus, they're balanced. I mean, they're in a dynamic relationship with each other. This is your self will. Where the third chakra goes, the two other chakras will follow. If you use your willpower, you can lift your energy. If you use your willpower to affirm your separateness, then the heart will be pulled down by where the solar plexus goes, where the navel goes, I mean. So the heart, it's not sufficient to follow your heart, because your heart is also the seat of likes and dislikes. Air is expansive, but it's still separate. You know, ether is more subtle, and super ether is even more subtle, but the heart is too easily guided by what it likes and what it doesn't like. And so if you're being pleased, your heart will tell you in a certain way, but if things stop pleasing you, you'll go in another direction. It's just not safe enough. Now, what people are saying, though, when they say follow your heart, is that feeling is also important. But calm feeling, this is where the throat chakra comes in. The throat is the calmness. Calm feeling guided by wisdom is intuition. But feeling alone too easily goes, and this becomes just English words trying to make a difference. There's a difference between feeling and emotion. And emotion can take you into separateness too easily. I love you, you love me. Oh, you don't love me anymore? Well, I never really loved you either, you know? Because it takes you out of yourself. But Jesus, dying on the cross, looked at those who were crucifying him and prayed that God would forgive them for the folly of what they were doing. I mean, they were not being nice to him, but his love was not centered in whether or not it was pleasing to him. It was centered in the truth of it. I have a bunch of other questions, yeah.
Okay, I hope I can phrase this question completely. I've had an understanding of karma as when we come in from past lives, we're bringing certain energies with us.
Right.
And then in the choices that we're making in this lifetime, the past karma is interacting with those choices we're making to even create more karma in this lifetime. Like if I make a choice to do a kind act.
Well, think of it like this. Think of it as a dynamic interplay with each of these exerting a certain pull on, let's call it, your decision making, the bubble of your consciousness. And so the each of these is it's completely impersonal. This isn't the whim of God or anything. It's exactly the energy and the consciousness that you actually have, not what you present, not what even what you yourself imagine, what you actually have. And every time you interact or do something, you can be real, real nice and real, real mean inside. And if you're real, real mean, doesn't matter how nice you look, it registers as mean. Okay. So this pattern here is constantly shifting depending on what you're doing. And it's an interplay where the dominant forces, think of it like this, a river running and a lot of little whirlpools. And the river's trying to go to in a certain place, but it keeps getting deflected. So my little consciousness is trying to get to there, but on the way to there, it gets sucked into this whirlpool. So my energy is trying to flow in a harmonious pattern guided by wisdom, but as it passes by here, a whole lot of it gets sucked over into these different whirlpools.
But I'm not coming in with certain patterns.
No, you are coming in because this pattern, this is you in the astral world,
okay.
And you incarnate and make a body, you choose where you choose your country, your culture, your parents, your gender, your physical appearance, your health, your lack of it. It's all a reflection of what your jiva needs based on what the imbalances are here and what experiences will progress you. And whether it will progress you forward, nowhere, or backwards just depends on the decisions that you make, the willpower that you exercise. Okay?
That helps. Thank you.
Certainly, yes. Well, but
likes and dislikes. But following your heart, I think that heart in that sense of that, in context, actually means following love.
This is the limitation of the language of English.
Semantics.
No, it's the language of English is not precise in terms of consciousness. So you can say heart, you can mean the anahat chakra, you can mean divine love, you can mean sexual passion, you can mean a thousand things. So you have to know what you're talking about. But just for a second, there's another point that's important here, which is this is the word I wanted to use. All progress is, the word is directional, okay? If you've been absolutely selfish or absolutely lazy, let's say, just totally unwilling to do anything, to suddenly become inspired to make a lot of money and spend it on yourself is progress. Because at least you're putting out energy. Right. But if you are a Mahatma Gandhi and you suddenly decide, gee, I'm the most famous lawyer in India, I could open a practice and get all the best clients, that would be backwards. But if the other guy went to law school and became rich, that would be forward. So when we're working out our karma here, and even when we're talking about working, being guided by divine wisdom will lead you progressively through what the experiences are that you need. And that's why it becomes very difficult when you're trying to even pray for someone else, because you don't always know what they actually need. You may want them to not have to suffer. But do you want them to not grow? Do you want them to not learn? Do you want them to not become free? Think of it if you're raising a child. You're raising a child and, you know, I knew this woman, God help her. She never wanted to hear her children cry. She just, you know, raised two of the most helpless, spoiled brats. They were impossible. And it was not, she wasn't loving those children. She was just following her own weaknesses. So if you're trying to really love people, or if you're putting yourself from the point of view of what I would call divine mother, what does she want for her children? She wants them to reach their full potential and have tremendous power. And if they have to struggle a little bit to do it, I mean, if you really love someone, you help them struggle. You don't try to prevent them from struggling, because it's all directional. And if it's a really hard, unlearned lesson, you're going to have to learn it. And so when you watch people learning really hard lessons, instead of panicking, instead, I mean, the prayer, the best prayer is, Lord, whatever it is you're trying to teach them, help them to learn it. When my parents were at the end of their lives and I was freaking out at a certain point, my mother had Parkinson's, and then my father's mind went a little loose, especially when my mother had the Parkinson's, it was like I was so intent on interrupting their karmic experience because it was really making me uncomfortable. And finally I realized what was happening, longer than I'm proud to admit, that I wasn't thinking about them at all. I was entirely thinking about me. Even though it looked like I was thinking about them, because here I am, the concerned daughter, trying to make everything work right, but I wasn't. I wasn't thinking at all about what they were trying to learn and why their karma had brought them here and what the positive potential of this was. I just wanted to stop. And finally I stood back and I just changed it completely. And my relationship to them became inwardly, how can I help you? You know, what are you trying to learn and how can I help you? And everything just got so much better because I was no longer, here's the actual word, afraid. Where does fear come from? Fear is not wisdom. Fear is way down here. Everything has to stay exactly the way I want it to stay or else I'm going to panic, right? And so the jiva is often given lots of experiences it can't control. Lots and lots of experiences it can't control. Because what is real? Where does happiness come from? Who am I? You see? And so this pattern will just go on and on. But now here's the really, 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 really good news. This is just energy. There's not one fixed thing here. And whatever it is that you're experiencing, if you like it or don't like it, behave differently. Not always so easy. If the magnetism is really strong and the whirlpool is always sucking you into it, but you can.
So you're talking about repeating karmic patterns, right? So I feel that once you go into a state of forgiveness, the pattern stops because there's really no more lesson to learn from that repeating pattern. So what is your take on how to stop the wheel of karma?
Well, that's a very good way to put it. The whole point of the game is a very simple one. If you actually think the whole point of life, everything about life, each incarnation, is expanding your awareness. You're born as a little helpless child. You don't know what country you're in. You don't know what language you're supposed to speak. You don't know how to use a spoon. You don't know anything. And you gradually increase your awareness. I remember this little boy. He was about 2. I went to visit his family, and he grabbed my hand, and he dragged me upstairs. He was so excited. He went to his room, and he went to his little dresser drawer. And he looked at me like, you are not going to believe. And he pulled out the dresser drawer, and it was filled with his little clothes. And he pointed specifically, and he said at the top of his lungs, "Socks!" Like that. Then he pushed the drawer closed, and he looked at me like this. And then he opened it again, and he said, "Socks!" You know, and we did that about 3 times. Because he had figured out that inside that drawer, every time, there were socks. I mean, that was the beginning of his expanding his awareness of this planet. So you get yourself really caught up on the idea that you're a female and your beauty is everything, and you get disfigured in an accident. And you have to then find out, who am I? What is real? You have to expand your awareness beyond the self-definition of just being beautiful. Or age does that to you. You know, all these different things that happen. Or you're rejected by someone you love. And you have to expand your awareness. Where does my happiness come from? It's very simple. So it's always the end of karma. Is each karmic cycle ends when you have expanded your awareness to the point where you are no longer, your happiness is no longer dependent on anything limited. So forgiveness is a way to say that. So-and-so didn't treat me right. I hate them. But then you gradually realize that my happiness doesn't depend on how that person behaved. You expand your awareness beyond whatever that might be, whatever it might be, and then that cycle is finished for you. But that doesn't mean you're free. That just means you've progressed. Yes.
But you can say at the extreme that ignorance is bliss, but that's not really true because you're not really aware.
Well, this is where you have to start asking yourself, and I mean, I mentioned drinking just because it was a conversation I had with someone yesterday. People enjoy drinking because it lessens your awareness. It brings your consciousness into just a very subjective world. You forget your worries. You feel more handsome. You feel more attractive. But your consciousness is actually lessened. You often behave in a ridiculous manner, and you don't know who the president is. Right? Okay. You've actually lessened your awareness. And some people feel that lessening awareness is greater happiness. But
right. So that shouldn't be the barometer as to spiritual evolution, if you want to call it that. Happiness is the awareness, right?
It's greater awareness brings greater happiness, but that is actually the battleground. The battleground between what you would call subconsciousness, which is everything that you've already done until now, and superconsciousness, which is pulling you to be more than you have been so far. And it's always a battle of awareness. And it's like, will I actually acknowledge that the person that I love is an alcoholic and I really need to accept that? Will I actually acknowledge that I have no friends because I'm not a very nice person? You know, will I really accept the fact that I'm old and this is not an attractive style for me to wear anymore? You know, it's just like any of those things, it's always a battle of increasing your awareness. And we think, you know, if I just go home and watch television, that's a nicer thing to do than to have a creative hobby or to meditate. And it's a battle every day. Do I get up right now and have a good meditation and do my yoga before I go to work? Or do I just lie in bed a little longer? Do I pick up the remote control and click the television? Do I just check Facebook to see what's going on? You know, it's just constantly. And as long as we as long as our experience supports limited awareness as being the same as happiness, we will continue in that way. And that's why hard things happen to us. Now I'm settled down into my little house with my little family, and this is the way it's all going to be. And then something blows it up. And we do not consider that a happiness-making experience unless and until we have it has forced us to expand our awareness, and then we suddenly discover, oh, yeah, there's actually much more potential for happiness here than there was here. But generally speaking, things are ripped out of our white-knuckled grip. You know, very few people have the courage to just put them on the table over and over again. And I'm very sympathetic. It's a long project. Yes?
I'm just curious. I know you said there's not really like a hierarchy, and the lower chakras are bad, and the higher ones are good. And I get a sense that you need to keep them all kind of attended to so they can be in some sort of beautiful harmony.
Exactly. All are needed.
And so is it true that, like, you almost might, in some ways, if you're focusing too much, like on your higher chakras, that can actually throw you out of balance too?
No. No. Not if you're doing it properly. See, there's a great deal of information that is semi-accurate. Okay. If you are concentrating, especially at the spiritual eye, in the right way, that's the only way I can put it, and right way means in the way that actually produces the result that you want. I don't mean right like dogmatically true, like my church knows and yours doesn't, but correct in that it produces the result that you want, then everything else is energized because of that. But if you imagine, as many people do, I'm just never going to deal with any of my problems. I'm just going to give it to God. But behind give it to God is I'm scared to death to just even deal with myself on any level. Then no matter what you say you're doing, you're not really doing it. So it's subtle. And it can't just be said, you should do this and this will happen, you should do this, because what is your pattern? I was, when I was 18, I didn't know about the chakras yet, but I was 18 and I was spending the summer in New York, 19, spending the summer in New York, and I realized that I was nice because I was terrified to speak up. I didn't know what would happen if I ever really expressed myself. You can't tell that now, but I was like that. And I was in New York City, which was great, because people in New York City are so rude, just as a regular basis, compared to Californians, that you could do something in California that's just so outrageous, and in New York, it's just nobody even notices. So I just started being a bumptious New Yorker. Because I was just terrified, you know, to just even, you know, just move. And so I looked like I was operating from this loving, harmonious level, but I wasn't. I was just absolutely frozen in the first chakra. All my security was based on not rocking the boat. So you can analyze the chakras and see where you're out of balance, but then the ideal way to strengthen them is to strengthen them from here in the right way. Now, that's a summary, and I'll send you to the website because there's more on the website. Okay?
There's a very
subtlety here, yes.
If you're trying to change, right, like you want to act, but it's not you yet, so you're trying to fake it in some way, right? Trying to be nice. But then there is the other thing, like it's not registering because you are not being true to yourself.
So well, how do you break that? No, I hear what you're saying. Okay, let's. It depends on whether you're being hypocritical or whether you're being sincere.
So how do you be sincere?
You be sincere because you exercise your willpower. See, that's why you've got to have fire. Nothing will happen without fire. If you're just trying to be nice and hope that it'll, you know, you're going to get to heaven because you're faking it, you're not. But if your fiery willpower is engaged and you are determined to break this habit of blaming everyone for everything that happens to you, and you begin to reform your thoughts and reform your words and apologize when you're wrong and listen when people correct you, that's quite different than just trying to paste it on. So it's all just a question of what you're actually doing. For me, it was progress to be rude, because what I had to overcome was fear. That was my block. My block was fear. And so I had to become unafraid to be rude. I had to be unafraid of what people thought of me. I had to be unafraid of not always looking like the harmonious, nice one. Once I got so that I began to enjoy that person, I had to stop and ask myself if this is who I really wanted to be. And I backed up a little bit. But
so
that's
going up one by one.
Well, not exactly one by one, but sort of one by one, directional. It depends on what number is up. I mean, it's not like you get one straightened out and then you work on two, because they're all involved with each other.
Sure.
But you ask yourself, where am I standing and where can I go next? Yes?
I just want to know how much there are meditations that I found online that talk about chakra balancing as such. So a regular practice of that would help balance the chakras. I feel a little conflicted because when you say that the imbalances are probably the soul trying to express itself towards lessons you want to work. So how can a meditation per se just,
Okay, here's the image. This is the last question I'll take, and then I'll answer as many more as you want, but I'll also release you. Think of it like this. What you really want is for the river to flow freely. You want the energy to circulate, and you want it all to be guided by wisdom. So my security, my flexibility, my loving, everything is guided by wisdom. As I said earlier, it gets confused because a lot of the river gets deflected into these habitual responses. So the energy that's actually flows freely is all chunked up. So if you think of it as an actual physical river, I used to live near the Yuba River and I'd go swimming there. And the Yuba is very powerful and there were lots of eddies. And the eddies would exist so long as the flow of the river was less powerful than the pull of the eddy. Okay? But with the river, if the river was more powerful, then the eddy would be over, because it was just a magnetic relationship. So all of these little vortices of karma will continue to hold themselves until something changes the magnetism. Either their number will come up. It'll be time for you to experience something. And karma goes on for many incarnations. You just get tiny pieces in one lifetime. But the other way you can dissolve those vrittis is by increasing the magnetism of the flow of energy in your spine. Meditation, rightly done, and this is partly your question also, rightly done, it makes the energy flow very powerfully in a very clean, straight, up and down line. The practice of Kriya, which is what Yogananda talks about in Autobiography of a Yogi, is particularly what's not unique, but it is effective because it makes the energy flow so strongly up and down that gradually many of these vrittis get dissolved and the karma just goes away. So the chakra is automatically balanced by the practice without your ever actually having to dismantle any particular bit of karma or live through it. Okay, now sometimes as the vritti comes into the mainstream, the vritti means the whirlpool, it hits like that and everything blows up. But you're still working it out. It's just not so pleasant. Sometimes it just dissolves and you don't even know it. You just suddenly are not reacting to life in the same way and you don't even know why. It's just karma's been dissolved and something happens and you have a wholly other response because your vibration has shifted. So I have no idea what you're reading, but in theory, yes, meditation practices will completely balance the chakras, dissolve all the karma, and move the jiva into infinity. We teach meditation from, and there are, if you're interested in what we offer, you start with Ananda. There's also Ananda, .org, it's called, which is, they have a whole huge online courses. Most of our courses are geographically where we are, but there's also, you can go online for lots. I have some on my website, but they're more like other, my classes I've given than actually online classes, but you can find them. Okay.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask you, the third chakra, the fire chakra, is that somewhere on your belly button?
It's your belly button.
It is the belly button.
But it's not the belly button.
No, I know.
But it's through the center of the body, but it's at this level of the physical body.
And so then you said the second one is around the sexual organ, so yeah. Is that just a little bit lower there?
Yeah.
Show me on just your body.
Well, you know where they are. No, I don't want to. No, that's all right.
Okay, and then the throat chakra, I'm just trying to find out for myself.
No, exactly. So it's the base of the spine, the anus, the genitals, the belly button, the heart, the throat, the medulla, the spiritual eye, the top of the head.
Okay, and we weren't numbering the medulla because that's part of the...
Pardon me? Yeah, right. This is the same sixth chakra, positive and negative pole. Very good. No, that was a good question.
I'm hoping that she'll teach us a little exercise on how to meditate.
Well, I'm not going to. Because I've used up all my time. But I can encourage you to go to Ananda, go to the website, go to ananda.org, and you'll find lots and lots of choices. Okay? I'm going to release you. I'm happy to stay and continue to answer questions if you like. This talk was recorded, and it'll be posted on that website before too long. Okay? Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Yeah.
I have offered a longer course of this, and Ananda Palo Alto offers a longer course of this. Personally, I don't teach it right now, but others do teach it very well.
Okay.
Yeah, you should look. Ananda Palo Alto offers it regularly.